Chardonnay, the wine that put California whites on the map in the 80s. Still is the first wine we think of when asked, "Want to drink a white?" Some say one man's vision is responsible for this. Jess Stone Street Jackson of the Kendall Jackson Wine Empire. Edward Humes, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, makes his first foray into the wine world with his Jackson biography, A Man and His Mountain. Noelle Carter met with Edward.
Edward, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
What was it that drew you to Jess Jackson?
Well, you know, Jackson was a game changer. He really was a kind of Steve Jobs of wine in his own way and invented a whole category. He cast aside a very successful law career, mortgaged his house, invested everything into opening a winery that pretty much everyone said would fail. And he ended up putting Chardonnay on America's tables.
You describe him in the book as this bigger-than-life man with kind of the Midas touch. He's passionate, charismatic, and at times ruthless.
That's a good summary. He, I don't have too many billionaires on my Rolodex, but he was a very easy person to be around, very knowledgeable, kind of a Renaissance guy. But the thing that I found most interesting about him was his very complete contrarian streak.
Yeah.
You know, his Midas touch really emanated from doing things that people said probably would fail. That was his motivation to then prove them wrong. And he just seemed to be ahead of the curve on a lot of things that became trends after he blazed the trail.
Well, you know, you mentioned describing him as the Steve Jobs of the wine industry and Kendall Jackson itself as sort of the Starbucks of the wine industry. How exactly did he transform the industry?
He was one of the relatively small band of winemaking pioneers in the late 70s and early 80s who changed California's image and put it on the map of quality wines in a way that hadn't been true before. And it's interesting because Kendall Jackson became very large, but it remained a family enterprise. It's, in fact, other than the very different Gallo family company, Kendall Jackson is the last of the great California wine family-owned companies. And Jess was kind of a micromanager for much of the life of the company, even when it had become so vast. He had this vision of the affordable luxury of wine, and this first Chardonnay he made became kind of a cash cow. It's been enduringly popular, one of the most popular Chardonnays in the world for many, many years, but it wasn't very expensive. People could afford to have it. He was catering to the everyday person's palate rather than the very elite wine culture, and that both irritated and entranced his critics and peers.
It seems that as successful as he became and as successful as Kendall Jackson and his other enterprises became, he always viewed himself as the everyman and the underdog.
Yes. Yeah, the billionaire underdog is a bit of a contradiction in terms. Again, there's the contrarian streak. But it goes back to his roots. He grew up very poor in San Francisco and worked a zillion jobs. You know, we tried to count how many different jobs he had over the course of his life, and we stopped at 50. You know,
wow.
He was a Berkeley cop. He was a lumberjack. He sold newspapers on the corner of San Francisco when he was a kid. And ended up putting himself through law school, a very successful career that he worked hard to build. Then put all that aside and threw himself into wine in a way that had a huge impact on his industry. You know, it's kind of one of the great second acts in American entrepreneurial history. But that wasn't really where he was at the start of Kendall Jackson. What he had was a winery that was hanging by a thread. Financially, a vintage in which the fermentation had become stuck for the Chardonnay grapes that he was growing in Lake County, and needed a solution. He kind of brought in these consultants, these young winemakers, the skunk works of wine, to try and fix it. And their idea was to respect the terroir of different grapes that he had either grown or bought, and do 7 or 8 different vintages, very small ones, and try and stanch the losses and stay alive financially. And he said, "I can't, you know, I'm one guy with a winemaker and my daughter's working for me. I can't market 8 different kinds of wines."
Right.
And so it was really necessity that drove him to this idea of making a blend, which horrified all these winemaking consultants he was working with. And he said, "No, I want to make a wine that blends all the best grapes from the coastal regions of California and call it a super blend. And let's see. Let's taste it." And he said, don't you think it tastes good? And he said, yes, but you can't do that. It tastes fine, but you can't do that. Why can't I do it? I can do it.
What I loved was he took something that would have horrified other winemakers. And not only does he market that, but that becomes the whole selling point for the wine. And you mentioned when he started doing these tastings, he would invite people to blend their own wines just so they could see what a wonderful blend his was and how difficult it is to do the right blend.
He brought in wine critics and writers and journalists and industry people and fed them and then sat them down in this room with all the different wines that were the components of his Vintners Reserve Chardonnay and said, you make it. You see it. You say
it. It was a fascinating way to sell. Yeah.
And it was. And people loved it. I mean, it was fun. And there's no arguing with success. It was hugely popular and became even more so after Nancy Reagan started pouring it at the White House.
Right.
And that made news in San Francisco and then nationally. It was, it was Nancy's wine. And it really caught fire after that. So, he hit something that people liked and the critics be damned, and tradition be damned. But then he threw it out. Everybody started making plans. He says, well, no, now I'm going to make estate wines and I'm going to focus
on
the
terroir. And he started buying all the fine little wineries.
Yeah. And also acquiring raw land that he converted to vineyards in areas that hadn't previously been used for winemaking, but he felt had a lot of promise, and he was really successful in that.
Edward, I really want to thank you so much for talking with me today. This book was such a fascinating read.
Well, thank you, Noelle. It's been a pleasure.
Edward Humes is author of A Man and His Mountain, The Everyman Who Created Kendall Jackson and Became America's Greatest Wine Entrepreneur. Contributor Noelle Carter is the Los Angeles Times Test Kitchen Director and writes the Culinary SOS column.